A very warm welcome to Cottage Talk. I'm David Hulley. Yes, it's me. I'm back for now. And I'd like to thank Russ for allowing me the opportunity to introduce the show. Thank you, the Fulham family, for the support and kind wishes you've given me and my family over the past few difficult weeks. That aside, I'd like to welcome my co-host, Mike Gregg. And without further ado, hand you over to the legend that is Russ Goldman so that we can get on with the show.
Thank you, David. And listen, it's so great to have you back, to have you both back. You know, again, both recovering. You know, we've got Mike dealing with his shoulder injury, and of course, we got the situation with you. And just update us on your health, David.
I had the replumbing about 2 weeks ago. I had all my organs disconnected from my aorta. I've had two new artificial aorta arteries grafted onto my existing aorta, and all my internal organs connected or disconnected one by one and reconnected to the new arteries. So in another couple of weeks, hopefully I'll be recovered enough that they're going to then put a stent into my original aorta, which will close off and shut off the aneurysm. Because at this stage, the aneurysm still exists, so I have the risk of it bursting and unfortunately which will lead to death. But all the hard work has been done. As long as I recover okay, the rest is all plain sailing by comparison.
Well, that's great, David. And listen, it really is truly wonderful to have you back on the show. And I'm happy to have you introduce the show because so many fans have contacted me about your health. And, you know, again, you know, you're almost there. You have one more surgery to go and then hopefully smooth sailing after that. But it's good to hear you and have you on the show. Before we get going, I have to welcome my other co-host who's recovering from shoulder surgery. Mike, how are you doing and how's the shoulder going?
Hi, Russ. Hi, David. Yeah, it's been a week now. I still can't move it that much. Just day by day, really. A few painkillers, that kind of thing, but nothing compared to what David's gone through. And it's really good to hear him on the show and wish him all the luck leading up to the next operation.
Absolutely. Listen, it's honestly, it's great to talk to both of you together. And it really is a blessing for me that I could do this show with both of you. But, you know, again, David, you know, I'm thinking about you often and I just wish you a speedy recovery. And like you said, after the next surgery, hopefully you'll be fine after that. All right, guys, let's get going with some Fulham news. And we're going to start here. And Mike, I'll go to you first because, again, you were involved with some of the response here. The London Evening Standard had a story on Friday stating that Fulham owner Shad Khan could sell the club and then buy Tottenham Hotspur. The story was denied strongly by the club, with Mr. Khan's spokesman, Jim Woodcock, issuing the following statement, quote, "These reports are total nonsense and complete fiction." All right, Mike, what do you make of this story and the response from the club? You actually contacted the club yourself, so share your thoughts on this whole entire situation.
Okay, yeah, so what happened yesterday was that, contrary to popular belief, I wasn't looking at Twitter at the time. You know, I'm not on there 24/7. But Dan Crawford of the Fulham Supporters Trust contacted me and said, had I seen the Evening Standard and the story they were running? So went straight to the link, had a look, and we agreed we had to contact the club straight away to get a response. And I emailed the CEO, Alistair McIntosh, Sarah Brooks as well, and Jim Woodcock. And I have to say the speed of their response was very good. I think, you know, all in all, from the first links going up to possibly Jim Woodcock tweeting, it may have been an hour, 90 minutes at most. I haven't really checked. But all the replies were that this was nonsense, complete fiction, total rubbish. And you know, it was good that the club responded so quickly. And you know, you had some people say, oh, it's not a proper denial. I don't know how much of a denial it could be, much more. But you know, the club can't respond to every rumor, be that a transfer link, be that you know, the club is going to be sold. But I think with this particular one, they had to. And it will be interesting if there's any follow-ups, whether the club asks the Standard to apologise. I mean, it is their chief reporter, football reporter, who put the story online and in the hard copy paper as well. And what happened there was, you know, you had the normal naysayers coming on saying, "Oh, this is Khan's plan all the time, and I've been telling you." And then, you know, there's others who agree that it was the Evening Standard who certainly, you know, overseas visitors or listeners would probably not know too much about, but it's the London paper, and it's been very negative towards Fulham for, well, for as long as I can remember. It's rare we have anything positive in that paper, and if anything, they're more interested in covering the, you know, Manchester, Liverpool teams than they do London teams. But that aside, all we can do is praise the club, and I would like to see a further response from Khan, hopefully over the next few, you know, even if it's over the next week. You know, I know he's a busy man, and but it would be good to have a personal response from him via the club website. But the story was 2 + 2 = 5, and you know, they run with it, and I do hope the club follow it up and get an apology if there is absolutely no truth in at all in it.
Yeah, listen, Mike, this is a story that really just took off. I saw first thing in the morning here, and you know, I have my own contacts, so I contacted several people as well, and I was told, you know, by a source that the story was false, and I actually put it on Twitter that I had a reliable source that said that, and I truly believed that at the time, and obviously believe it now. But what's interesting, again, the writer James Ollie, you know, again, he's entitled to write what he wants. But again, I'm hoping that he has something to back this up. What's interesting about this is, again, I was thinking about this, and when you think about the plans for Fulham with the Riverside stand, you think about the plans for the Jaguars in Jacksonville, you know, kind of spending a tremendous amount of money on their practice facility there, and really, really redoing that seaport area. So again, it did not fly with me, the story on its face. And what's interesting is that James Ollie was able to basically tick off three different fan bases: Jacksonville Jaguars fans, Fulham supporters, and Tottenham Hotspur supporters. So he got all three involved, which was interesting. He hit the trifecta. But I don't, you know, again, I don't believe the story. I you know, again, on the face of it, does it make sense? Could you see a link? Could you link 1 to 2? Yeah, you could make the link. But again, knowing all the steps that would have to come, and knowing the situations with Fulham, and especially with the Jaguars, I just didn't give it much weight. I wanted this club to respond, and they responded fairly quickly. Okay, that's my thoughts on that. David, what are your thoughts on the story?
Well, what surprised me most is that Spurs have been very excitedly talking about their new stadium this week, you know, Daniel Levy, the chairman, etc. So you would have thought it's probably about the least likely time when they would be wanting to sell the club, really, because they're so excited about what the future holds for them. So forgetting anything else, I couldn't really imagine Spurs or, you know, and the owners, the shareholders, whoever, would be looking to sell it. From another point of view, though, you know, a reporter is as good as what he puts, really. I would have thought any decent reporter would want to be getting things right. The more they get right, the better the exclusives, the better their reputation. So to go with something completely ridiculous and completely false doesn't do you much good as a reporter, I'd think. It might get you publicity, but not the right sort. So it does surprise me that they would run with a story like this if there was absolutely no foundation. So I have to think that the reporter must have believed there was some truth to this to go with it. On the other hand, obviously, no sooner as I saw the things appearing on Twitter, I saw Jim Woodcock himself tweeted to say that it was complete rubbish. Even before you'd put it was rubbish, Russ. Jim Woodcock said it's rubbish. So I think I can take it from there that if Jim Woodcock says it's rubbish, we have to believe that it's rubbish.
I totally agree with you. The minute that he put that out there, that the story was rubbish, for me, it's over at that point, because I know, and Mike, you know as well, obviously he's the spokesperson for Shahid Khan and works closely with Mr. Khan. So if he's saying it, I feel very strongly that the story's false. because he would not go out like that. Jim would not go out like that if he didn't truly believe that there was nothing to this. And so again, that for me, it ends there. And again, I don't know what sources Mr. Ollie had. You know, again, I've been following him. I followed him on Twitter. I was actually surprised by the story. And it's funny, Mike, I'm going to go back to you before we move on. You know, talking about Dan Crawford, when I was in London 3 years ago, I spent a good amount of time with Dan. And we walked by the offices of the London Evening Standard. And he said, Russ, we call that the substandard. And I just found it funny. And it didn't hit me until yesterday.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, it's been, as I said earlier, a long time since that that newspaper gave us the time of day. And so most of the stories are about us are negative. And Dan is quite right. You know, is the substandard, not only to ourselves, but to a number of other clubs. And it's the only London paper that we have, you know, dedicated to the whole of London that you get any kind of news from. So we have to deal with it when they come along. And as we saw yesterday, most of the time it's wrong. But I would just go back to you know, the actual report, you know, and it mentions nothing's really, you know, they haven't met, they haven't really spoken.
Right.
But you know, you look at Tottenham, their announcement, and I certainly the announcement about having the ability to have NFL games at the stadium was a surprise. I hadn't seen that before. So it just wouldn't surprise me that somewhere down the line, a Tottenham person has been at an NFL meeting, or, you know, a group of owners, or probably not even owners, you know, minions, and right. Said, you know, what does it take to, you know, have an NFL pitch or a stadium? And, you know, they've obviously built that into it, you know, reading the plans, they're going to take the grass pitch out, put the plastic pitch in for the football. So there's quite a chance that Jaguars and Tottenham officials crossed paths and had a conversation. And I suspect that's where this has come from. And he's built the story on top of that. But, you know, as David said, we've had the denial.
Okay, I think we lost Mike there, David. You still with me?
I am.
Okay, I think, Mike, I think we just lost you for a second. Just dial back in, and we'll get you back on. Again, we're trying the new audio service with blogtalkradio.com, and it's working pretty good. But again, it's going to have its little hiccups, and Mike should be dialing back in pretty soon. But again, Mike brings up a good point, because if you look at the connection, David, between, say, Tottenham Hotspur, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, again, there could have been a conversation about possibly playing games over the next 10 years, you know, again, because the Jaguars have been playing games in London. Maybe there'd been a conversation about possibly playing a game a season in their new stadium. But again, I think, you know, to make that leap, and again, I don't know Mr. Ollie's source on this. It sounds like to me he's making a leap to so many other steps that would have to happen for his story to be true. And that's why I don't put much weight into it, David. It doesn't sound like you do at all after Jim Woodcock's denial.
No, that's right. And I'm not sure how it would sort of lie politically anyway, if it was to happen. I mean, for the owner of Fulham Football Club to have his American football team playing games at a rival ground in London, I don't know if that would cause any sort of ill feeling perhaps with Fulham fans. It's understandable, obviously, that you know, the facilities there and the capacity there would be much more conducive to a large crowd than they can achieve at Craven Cottage. And you could argue that, you know, the pitch at Craven Cottage wouldn't be wrecked. But, you know, previously, obviously, they played at Wembley, which is a neutral location. So I don't know, maybe a few Fulham fans would be a bit sad if you know, the sister club played at a rival team. I don't know.
No, I listen, I hear you on that, David. It's, you know, again, an interesting part to all of this. And, you know, let's take it for what it's worth. And I hope Mike is right. And I hope we do get a statement at some point from Mr. Khan on this. I think that would be a help as well. But I'm just glad that the club came out so strongly. And I know it's a small statement, but they came out pretty strongly about it. And hopefully they diffused it and we can now move on. All right, let's move on to another topic in Fulham news. And Mike, I'll go right back to you. I've seen that you dialed back in on Tuesday. Fulham announced the signing of Jamie O'Hara. I already spoke to Emilio Danilo about this. I also spoke to Matt Smith about this yesterday. What are your thoughts on this signing?
Firstly, apologies for that. I pressed the wrong button on my phone, so that's why I cut myself off.
Jamie O'Hara.
Well, I mean, it's you know, he's been training with us. It wasn't a huge shock that he signed, and for me, a one-year contract. Some of the things he's saying, he's been at the club, you know, 3 or 4 weeks training, so they must be happy with his commitment and what he's producing. And you look at how he played for the worst team in the league last year, and he was the standout player for them. So he brings experience and probably more than anything, hunger to play well and get himself back to a level that, you know, where he was 4, 5, 6 years ago. You know, everyone was talking about how good Jamie O'Hara could be. So I'm very happy with the signing. How he's going to fit in, where he's going to fit, we don't know yet, along with the other signings as well, Pringle and Kearney, and the ones to come. So lots of competition, lots of movement, lots of energy and passing now in that midfield, something we haven't had for a while. And you know, we just need to move on to the other positions. But no, I'm very happy with the signing. You know, I think all those problems he's had, you know, he's separated from his, I think it was his wife. He's just going to get his career back on track after the injury and personal issues. And we're a club that's willing to give those kind of players a chance. And some of them have repaid as well. And I think we're going to see Jamie quite a lot this year. I mean, there was talk that is he just a squad player? I don't think he is. I can see him starting 25, 30 games easily for us.
Okay, very good. And before we go to David, Emilio threw this out there, and I also mentioned this to Matt as well. He put out a little bit of a comparison to Danny Murphy in the time of his career, and also, again, his impact that possibly he could have that type of resurgence in his career, similar to when Danny Murphy came to Fulham, and also the position that he plays. Can you see the comparison?
Well, I think a little bit for Jamie, that comparison's always been there, especially with, you know, the Spurs connection at the time. And I don't see him quite as the same player. And, you know, he's considerably younger than Danny was when he joined us. But, yeah, I mean, it's more about the resurgence of his career and trying to get back on track after, you know, one or two bad moves. And, yeah, like I say, I'm really looking forward to see what he can do and produce, because he, on his day, he is a very, very good player.
Listen, I agree with that. And that's why I'm in favor of this move. And I'll just mention that Fulham actually do have a preseason match day against Aston Villa in Portugal. And who knows, he could be playing in that. And we can get our first taste of what's going on with the club. And that's, you know, again, just want to mention that there is the match today. First preseason match against Aston Villa. All right, David, what are your thoughts about the signing of Jamie O'Hara? And on top of it, can you see the Danny Murphy comparison?
Well, I'm not sure why, but for some reason, I actually find myself more excited over the O'Hara signing than any of the other signings so far.
Interesting.
Because I think, you know, he was a great player at one point. He was, you know, really highly rated. I can kind of see the Danny Murphy comparison, that kind of creative, energetic, you know, player, use the ball well. If I remember rightly, he takes a good free kick as well, Jamie O'Hara.
He does.
Certainly, he's gone off the rails, a couple of bad moves. But if he can get back to somewhere where he was in his earlier days, then it will be a fantastic signing, and that year will be extended to several. So yeah, I'm expecting big things from him, really. And I hope he can pull them off.
I hope he can too, David. And listen, I'm excited by this signing. And as I just said to Mike, I think that he could be more than a squad player. Several fans I've seen on social media said, well, he's just a squad player. I don't think that's why he's being brought in. And again, this is a win-win because he wants to get, to basically turn around his career. This is a great situation for him. It's a prove it contract. It's a 1-year deal. If he does well, he'll get a long-term contract from someone. Hopefully it will be for him if he plays well. So again, I see this as a very positive signing. I'm with you, David. I don't know if it's the best signing. We're going to talk about that in a little bit in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable and share the thoughts from the Fulham supporters, but I think it's a really good signing. All right, guys, let's move on. And I was going to ask you guys about Brian Ruiz, but we're going to talk about that in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable because that could go along with our conversation of rating his career. We will talk about him leaving, but we're going to do that a little bit later. And David, I'm going to go back to you. Let's do one piece of transfer speculation. According to the Daily Mail, Fulham are potentially interested in 27-year-old Groningen Brazilian defender Eric Fernando Botega. What are your thoughts on this speculation, David? A center back, I think Fulham need one. What are your thoughts?
Well, we've been linked with a lot of defenders. You know, we've been linked with Dunk and the guy from Brentford and the Spanish guy. It's hard to know, where the truth lies in it all. Who have we actually bid for? Who have we talked to? I've got to say, I know absolutely nothing about this guy, but it's clear from obviously what happened last season, the defence needs some work. We need someone who's a linchpin to our defence, someone in the middle there who can hold things together. But for me at the moment, the biggest priority really would be a left back still, I think. Obviously, okay. we still have Amabrieta who could play there as well. And maybe that would be the fill-in plan if we don't sign a left-back. I mean, he could play in the middle as well. But we went through every permutation last season almost with Bader off, Byrne, Hutchinson, etc. And we never really, although we had a few settled combinations, we never really shut off the incessant goals from set pieces and things like that. So something needs to change there and we need to find the right key to the piece of the jigsaw that's going to do that. And it could be this guy, but I've heard nothing about him or seen anything else about him, so it could just be pure speculation, obviously.
Now, very good point there, David. And what's interesting is when we go through the Q&A section, one question is about left back, so I'll go right to you when I get to that topic for us to discuss. But Mike, I want to get your thoughts. David brings up a good point. Again, I don't know that much about this player, but it more for me is about the position. Again, we've been linked to several center backs. So what are your thoughts about the speculation? Can we read in to the fact that the club are looking to upgrade this position?
I mean, they're certainly looking at getting a center back, if not two, and they seem to be going down their list of targets. My understanding was that this was just an inquiry about, is he available? And I don't think it's gone anywhere beyond that at the moment. I mean, his stats, which a few of the guys online threw out yesterday and a video as well, he fits the bill, definitely. But, the question is, would he go from Holland over to a championship side? Quite possibly. But, I mean, it's key, it's been clear all summer that a centre-back is a target. Whether we've moved on from Dunk and the other ones as well that we've been linked with, we'll have to see. I mean, what you've got to look at is a few of these players are in the same position that players like Roberts and that are, is that they've got 1 year left on their contract. So the question is, who blinks first? Is it the club? Right. Do they want to keep them to the end of the season and not get a fee? Or will they take a fee closer to the transfer deadline? So it might be the case of we'll park these players for the moment and look elsewhere, continue with what we have at this time, and let's hope that the changes in the midfield are going to help the defenders who have not changed. It's exactly the same group as we had last year. So I fully expect a new centre back, whether it's one we've seen already listed or a new one. I expect someone to come in before kickoff of the season, and probably definitely before the Palace game. I would I was not keen on us going into the season with the same centre backs. We need someone fresh in there, a leader, someone experienced. And yeah, we'll have to see. I know they're working on it, but it's that. And then a left back as well, because I don't think Ambrea is going to play for us again. I think he's going to get moved out for various reasons, which are in the public domain. And Bodroff and Hutchinson and Byrne. I mean, the only combination that, you know, Byrne and Hutchinson only played once, and that was the Norwich game. So they might be worth another start, but the other, you know, mix all three of those up and you don't really see an improvement at all from last year, even given all the hard work that's going on pre-season. So defence is still a worry, but, you know, there's still a month to go. So we have to trust the club that they're going to bring someone in.
I think centre back is good. We've seen so much speculation with centre backs. That's why I have a feeling that they're going to eventually bring in one or, like you mentioned, maybe two. Left back is a concern for me. We're going to be talking about that a little bit because one of the supporters wants us to talk about left back, so we'll be getting into that. But defense is something that now I truly believe they need to really take a look at and upgrade that, because I think they've done a decent job. Now let's go to the second call. And believe it or not, we have a decent amount of topics for us to discuss from the Fulham supporters, which is nice. So, David, I'm going to start with you. Let's start with Marty Ward's question. David, do you feel we need another striker?
I have this feeling we're looking to be playing. The plan will be a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1, some sort of, you know, system like that. I just have this feeling that it's going to be a system where we play predominantly with McCormack as a lone striking role with running players to support him. So in that basis, no, I don't think we do, because the plan B would be obviously to bring on Matt Smith or Corley or even Taggart or something like that. So I think I don't think a striker is a priority as far as is concerned, because we saw Matt Smith do a great job last year. He really did, in the, you know, for all the reservations about his style of play. So that gives us the option always to mix things up. Obviously, you know, we're not counting things like injuries here and you can't account for those, but I think the plan is to start with a lone striker. That's going to be the way they're going to go forward. I'll probably be completely wrong, but in that respect, a striker isn't a priority at this time.
Okay, very good. And Mike, before I go to you, I just got your message. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can now.
Yeah. Okay, not a problem. Again, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna have these little issues with the new service. So thank you for giving me a little message there, because I want to make sure that you're hearing me clearly. So I'm gonna ask you the same question: do we need another striker?
I think a striker on the shopping list is at the bottom, but I do think once we have all the other pieces in place, if we reach the end of the transfer, get to the end of the transfer deadline without buying one, I can see us bringing in another, you know, depending on how much we spend, that type of stuff, money coming in. But I think we're one quality striker short. I mean, McCormack will get you 20 goals, no problem. Hopefully more, given the players that we're going to have. And I agree with David, we're going to play, you know, 4-5-1, 4-3-3, whatever way you look at it, but it's going to be one point, man. And I look at the other strikers, Smith, Woodrow, Dembele, all have great assets, Taggart as well. But I don't see any of them being that second striker who's going to give me 15 to 20 goals, which is what you need. When you break down a team that gets promotion, you need to have your top two strikers getting 40 between them. And I don't see that. So to share the workload with for McCormack, and, you know, he's not going to be able to play 90 minutes of every game, we need to be looking at having that second striker, that second quality one. With the players we brought in, you know, they're going to chip in with the goals. But, you know, it's just a stats-based look at things. I can't see where the goals are going to come from to help us reach that 70, 80 goals that you need to, and plus that you need to score to get promotion. So yeah, I expect a striker to come in, but it will be at the bottom of the pile, the least priority.
Okay, very interesting. And one of the things that Matt Smith mentioned to me last night, Mike, was that he actually considers Adam Taggart as a new signing. What are your thoughts about that? Because, again, he was injured all last year, and he's a striker, and now he, again, based on what I'm reading, he's fit.
Yeah, I mean, he did well in preseason last year. I saw him about three or four times in the under-21s, once at the beginning and then a couple of times near the end of the season when he was getting his fitness back. And you read his interviews, both in the Australian press and on the Fulham website, and he's raring to go. You know, he wants to prove a point. So another player who's hungry. But I don't know. You know, he's an unknown to us, isn't he? He did well in the World Cup, scored 15 to 20 goals in the Australian League. You know, what that converts to in the Championship, who really knows? But the thing is, we have all these different strikers, and we've spoken about it before. They're all different in their own way. And there's no one you could say, well, he's a carbon copy of him. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to have to prove his worth. I mean, there's five of them, isn't there? All fighting for possibly one place and two on the bench. So someone's going to miss out. And we all want to see Woodrow do well. We all want to see Dembele do well. And Taggart and Smith. And it's a full group of strikers we have. But I go back to my point. I just don't see the real quality in a second one there.
Okay, let me ask you this, Mike, and then I'll go to David. I want to get his thoughts on this, considering we're talking a good amount about striker. Again, speaking to Matt last night, he was mentioning to me that he believes that, you know, I was talking about how I thought the signings in the midfield would benefit Lasse Vigan Christensen and Ross McCormack. He actually sees benefit for Matt Smith because of the ability of these players to cross the ball into him. What are your thoughts on that?
Which is fine if we go to a 4-4-2, but I just don't see us playing 4-4-2. You know, it's I see runners in midfield. I see Pringle on the left, you know, attacking the box, and on the right hand side we're going to have the, you know, let's say for example Christensen, and you've got McCormack in the middle, you've got Kearney coming from the midfield as well. So it's not a case of filling the box with two strikers. It's a case of filling the box with a bunch of midfielders following up McCormack or whoever that one striker is up front. So if we were going to play 4-4-2, I tend to agree, but I just don't think we're going to play that way.
Okay, fair enough. And David, over to you. Quickly, give me your thoughts on Matt Smith on what we're talking about. Then I'm going to go to left back with you.
No, I think Matt Smith, the striker, not the guy from the show last night, he will definitely be the plan B. I think 4-4-2 will be the plan B if things aren't going well. We saw what he can do, what a threat he can be, how he can shake things up, and probably how much more effective he is in that role than when he starts. Although he did well when he started, but it takes away the option to change things around, you know, to make a change, because you can't bring on someone else who's going to, you know, increase on what Matt Smith's done. There's not a bigger guy who's going to win even more balls in the air. If you start with Matt Smith and take him off, you lose that threat. So it's a great thing for him to come on. So, yeah, I think certainly Matt Smith in a 4-4-2 is the plan B, but it's a 4-5-1, 4-3-3 type scenario to start with McCormack as the focal point up there and runners playing off him.
Okay, very good, David. And right back to you. Roger Lewis asked about left back. You've already mentioned it. Do the co-hosts feel that signing a top quality left back is the most important position to fill? What are your thoughts on that?
Certainly. It's right up there with a central defender, if not paramount, because, you know, Amrabeta could do a job there, but, you know, as Mike said, not sure if he's actually going to play for us again. Certainly, I have no faith in Kavanagh, unfortunately. I don't think we could rely on him at left back. And so we really need to be looking to get someone in there, someone who's experienced perhaps or strong enough. Obviously, we liked what James Husband did. That's all gone very quiet on that front, so I'm not sure if anything's going to happen there. But I'd be delighted if he was to come back. Certainly, very, very key in position. You know, over the years, it's, you can count on one hand almost how many successful left-backs we've had. You know, Konchesky and Brevet. And apart from those two, really, it's been bit part players, you know, for in and out of the team, season here, season there, almost. It's always hard to find a good left-back, I think. I guess if we didn't sign anyone, there's the option that, which we'd hate, but he'd play maybe Grimmer at right-back and Richards at left-back, as he did at Norwich,
right.
Or that kind of scenario anyway. But that really,
good
you know,
point.
To be starting the season with a fudge like that, I think... wouldn't endear Kit to the fans to start off with. So, fine, perhaps if we have injuries and we get stuck, but no, we need a proper, dedicated left back.
Okay, very good take there. Mike, what are your thoughts about that? Again, you've already mentioned center backs and you also mentioned left back. Which is more of a priority for you?
Left back, if I had to give you a choice, yeah. I mean, I agree totally with David there that if we got to the first game of the season and we hadn't brought a left back in, then yeah, I would have to go with Richards at left back and Grimmer at right back. I like Kavanagh, but unless he's been in the gym every day since a close season, he's still got a lot to do to make that position his own. And so yeah, I mean, the left back is key, and I think quite right, you know, Kit, not only Kit, but Rig as well, you know, because he's so important to bringing players in now. If they fail to bring in a left back at least, then he would have you know, let himself down, really, because that there are left backs out there and we need to go and get one, an experienced one, because even if Ambrosetti, you know, makes his peace with who he needs to and plays, we all know he's a little bit of a liability as well. And so he'd be in for two games, sent off, injured, whatever. And then we have to find someone to play there, you know, again. So, yeah, given a choice, left back or centre back, yeah, give me a left back. But they're two key positions that we need to fill.
I totally agree with you, Mike. And you know what? I was hoping that they'd try to get James Husband back. But again, I haven't heard anything about that. There's been speculation with Joe Bennett from Aston Villa. So that's still out there. We'll see if that comes to fruition, but left back is a definite need. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. This is a very interesting question from Luke Aiken. How important will the fact that Kit Simons is relatively inexperienced at managing in the Championship be this season?
How important? Well, it shouldn't be now. I mean, he's got 39 games behind him. People wanted Warburton, and he hadn't managed in the Championship until last season. So he's got that, you know, 85% of last year behind him. He's not a rookie anymore. You know, it's a tough game. He's got to learn fast, and he said he's learned his lessons, and we're gonna find it out, you know, very shortly. And you know, we've got the teams that have come down who we all know. The ones coming up are a little bit of an unknown, but there should be no surprises. And the jury, you know, a lot of us have said, okay, we give him a fresh start. He's not going to have long, though, if he starts making the same errors that he did. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that excuse is out the window now. He's a Championship manager, and he needs to show that from game one.
I totally agree with that, Mike. I think he's on a short leash. That's just my opinion. David, what are your thoughts?
No, I agree completely as well. You know, it's last season's gone. It's all for Kit now. Kit to sort of secure the job and make it his own for good by coming out of the traps well, showing that he has learned and improved, and because if he doesn't, I think we know what the answer is.
Okay, very good. David, right back to you. I'm going to give you a question from Jim Buttons. With the signing of O'Hara, the obvious maturation of Hyman, the reported desire of Kearney to play in a central role, and the importance of LVC, how do the co-hosts see the role that I'm just asking you first, if any, for Parker and Tunnicliffe?
For me, Parker will feature if he's fit, initially anyway, unless we sign someone else. Tunnicliffe, I can't see him featuring, really. I'd like to see Parker in there, but if we can manage without him, or if he's not fit at the start of the season, we have to start without him. And if we do well without him, then he'll have to, you know, accept that he's only going to be a bench or an injury option. But Tunnicliffe, I just can't really see where he would fit into all of this, even in a midfield-heavy 4-5-1 scenario. I think that all the players that have come in, and with the resurgence, hopefully, of LBC, there's not going to be a place for Tunnicliffe unless, of course, they keep him as, a squad player, utility player. If we have an injury at right back as a fill-in, I just don't see him getting in the team.
Okay, very good. Mike, what are your thoughts on this question?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this one. You know, you start playing around with lineups and who's going to be in, who's going to be out, who's going to be missing. And I don't agree with a lot of people saying, oh, it's O'Hara will replace Parker, you know, when Parker's not available. I actually think it's now Parker stroke Tunnicliffe as it stands now without another midfielder coming in. So I can see those two competing for that one deeper midfield role, that holding role, even though Parker really isn't suited to it. But and then the other players interchanging throughout the game and throughout different games. But that's the way I see Kit sort of thinking. You know, for Tunnicliffe, he played a lot of games under Kit last year, and he was the replacement for Parker when he wasn't playing in that position, especially you know, Sunderland, the way we've spoken about, where he really did do his job. You know, he looked as if he'd found his role. And that's what makes me think it's one or the other in the games at the moment. So I don't see Parker playing two games a week. So it could be one in, one out, that kind of basis, really. Tunnicliffe needs the competition as well. He didn't have a lot of competition to get for the midfield last year. So hopefully he will raise his game. But that's how I see it. It's between those two.
Okay, very good there. Mike, okay, one final question. Trucker Dave actually gave me two, but we don't have time for two. I'm sorry, Trucker Dave. I'm going to give Mike one. And Mike, this is a very interesting question and kind of goes to what we've already been talking about. At what point in the season do you think Kit will be sacked if he hasn't got enough points? At what points threshold do you think he has to hit?
Okay, when you don't really want to be talking about it, but you know, it is there. There's a break after 10 games. I think there's a mini break after 5 or 6 as well. But I'm of the mindset you need to be averaging after 10 games. If you want to be challenging, we need to have 17, 18 points plus. So that is my target. I've looked at the fixtures for the first 5 games, and we should have, you know, certainly 8 or 9 points from those games. So it's going to be, he could have as anywhere between 5 and 10 games. The natural cutoff point is the 10th game, when we have the international break of 2 weeks. So reassess there possibly. But you also don't want to be playing catch-up. So worst-case scenario, if we're 7 games in and we've only won 1 and drawn maybe 2 or 3, you make the change because it's obvious that he hasn't learned, it hasn't worked. You make the change straight away. But the natural point is 10 games, review where we are. Is he the right man to go forward?
Okay, fair enough. David, how about you?
Well, I welcome, obviously, every question that people put in, but it's not a question I'd like to think about, really. I'd like to try and focus more on the positives. But to answer the question, they removed my negative bits in surgery, I think. wait till we get into the Brian Ruiz bit. In all seriousness, I think I agree with Mike, really. I think the timescale would be similar to what happened last season. You know, 7-8 games, that kind of timescale, which is sort of halfway through what Mike talked about, you know, the 5 to 10 game threshold. I think if things are going pear-shaped by 7 or 8 games, I think that's when probably, you know, enough would be enough and a line in the sand would have been crossed. But let's hope he doesn't go to that, because, you know, we don't want another season like last season where we're playing catch-up. We want to be starting on the front foot and, you know, creating problems for other teams, because we have the advantage now that we're not probably one of the favourites, whereas last year we were. So perhaps we could be a dark horse and we can start well and continue well.
Okay, very good, David. Boy, David now all of a sudden is positive. I love it. I love it, David. You're going to be more positive now?
Well, when, you know, you've been like inches from death and 7 hours of surgery to save your life, perhaps some things, you know, come out differently in the wash.
I hear you, David. I'm just glad that you're okay, my friend. All right, let's move to the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. I'm going to read the comments first, and then I'll get your thoughts, both of you, on it. First question topic. Out of the players newly signed so far this upcoming season for Fulham, which player do you think could have the biggest impact? We'll start with Giannis. Giannis said O'Hara. Always been a big fan, classy player. Lee Randall says Tom Kearney. Ben Reed says Ben Pringle. Marty Ward says, I think Jazz Richards. No, wait, I mean Kearney. Roger Lewis said, from the player signed so far, I think Kearney shades it over Pringle. Ben Hardwick said Kearney, but O'Hara as a dark horse, maybe. Will John says O'Hara has the most to prove and the most experience. And finally, Grant Harris said Kearney, surely. Okay, Mike, how about you? Who do you think will have the most impact?
I think Kearney's going to have the biggest impact, but I think the person who people are going to remember is Pringle, just because of the way he looks. You know, he stands out with his blonde hair, and he's a very busy player. He's all, you know, he's almost always all over the pitch. So he's the player you're going to walk away from games remembering. But it's going to be, I think, Kearney who's going to be the one who plays that important part. So, you know, who makes that run to allow someone else to go in, because he is a good player. And O'Hara's going to have a role to play, but I think Kearney, you know, in the end, he's the one we've spent some decent money on, and you know, he is a good player, but it will be Pringle because of his blonde hair. We're all going to say, oh, he's man of the match, because he was so busy. You watch Kearney; he'll be the quiet one, keeping the ball moving and getting the odd goal here and there, and making the important pass.
Mike, I'm curious, who would you compare Kearney to if it was another championship player, or maybe even a Premier League player? What style do you think he has?
You've caught me out there.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm not going to compare him to anyone, because he is a busy player. I mean, he has some of the same attributes as Pringle, you know. But and then when we're talking earlier, it's about energy. It's about running. You know, you think of having a midfield with those three players that we've signed, even plus Christensen, and then one player holding. I mean, just think of the potential, you know, pace, maybe not pace in natural pace, but the movement is suddenly so different from having a team with Parker and Tunnicliffe. And, you know, it's we're going to be able to take teams apart if they work well together. I mean, it's right. Always dangerous having lots of these types of players. You know, I can see some situations where those four plus McCormick are stranded up front, and we've got, you know, five at the back being attacked by, you know, hordes of bloody QPR players or something. But that's what I'm looking forward to, really. You know, I can see quite a high-scoring season for us at both ends, you know, because we're not going to remedy the defensive problems overnight. It's just the thought of having potentially those four in the same team. I'm quite excited about seeing. And this gamble, you know, you could have Christensen sitting and Roberts on the right if he's still there. And
that's right.
Back in formation.
You know, what's funny, Mike, is because I watched a few of those under 21 European matches with Christensen. He was playing deep in the center.
Yeah, well, that's his long-term position, playing in front of the center backs, picking the ball up and keeping the ball moving. Got a decent pass on him.
He did very well, by the way.
He did, and he's done that at the under 21s for a long time, played that holding role. I don't see him doing it so much this season, given that we had Parker, Tunnicliffe. But I see him playing in the midfield and then out on the right occasionally. And, you know, as long as he's fully over his injuries by the looks of it, because he certainly did do a lot of work in that under-21 tournament. And, excited for him as well. But you know, there's Heidman as well. You know, he's hungry to play games and just coming off the under-20 World Cup.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot of competition there, which is great. That's what excites me. You guys both sound excited. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to what the potential of these players could do with Fulham this season. It could be an interesting, very interesting year. David, you've already mentioned that you are excited about the move for Jamie O'Hara, but will he have the most impact?
I have to slightly disagree with Mike because I think there's got to be a question answered about Ben Pringle's hair colour. And though at first look, I think he could be blonde, but there's definitely a bit of a ginger component to it as well there. So not in the same way as Steve Sidwell, but certainly when you look at the beard or whatever, the facial hair, I think it's been a bit helped. He's got that ginger element to him as well, but nevertheless, he definitely stands out like a beacon. So yeah, I can understand that he's going to be very noticeable. He won't be able to hide on the pitch. But for me, certainly, you know, I think O'Hara has the potential to make the biggest impact because he's like the wild card, really, isn't he? We've signed people like Kearney and Pringle who've had good seasons and consistency, but O'Hara certainly has the ability to be better than them from based on previous form if he can get anywhere back to that. So for me, that's still my wild card and the one that I'm sort of hoping will really turn in the goods for us.
Okay, great. So you have Jamie O'Hara. Very interesting, David. And again, I just like this positive David. I'm really enjoying this, David, you know, honestly. All right, but things could change now because we're going to change the topic. Now we're going to talk about Brian Ruiz, and let me just mention that Brian Ruiz has moved on to Sporting Lisbon, and his career with Fulham is over. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to rate his career with Fulham. And again, this isn't to really knock him. I just want to have an honest discussion about his career with Fulham, rate him from 0 to 10. So I'm going to share some thoughts from the Fulham supporters, and then I'll go to you guys. Colin Fortnall gave him a 4. Ben Reed said some flashes of utter genius, but overall, he never made a real impact. Ultimately, isn't suited for the rough and tumble of English football. Luke Aiken gave him a 6. Had some high points, but didn't fit into any manager's squad or plans. Marty Ward said lackluster. He was never going to live up to the price tag. David Tate said talented footballer never really got going at Fulham, though. Richard Dean wrote, obviously talented, but we never saw the best of him at Fulham. Maybe if we had him as a striker and had a creative midfield behind him, he would have achieved more. 5 out of 10 for effort. Ollie Asbro said never reached his potential with us. Ben Hardwick gave him a 4. Simon Rudd gave him a 5. Trucker Dave said based on how we used over the last season, a 5 out of 10, but he showed 8 out of 10 when used well. Jack Stanley said 6. Nick East said 4. Stephen O'Keefe, 6 out of 10, did not fulfill his potential, unfortunately. Sorry about that. Ben Lawrence says, here we go. Taking a little shot at me bringing up this topic, opening a can of worms time. Leave it out now. The guy is gone. Just lay it to rest. Hearing the bemoans again that he was at fault for everything, including his transfer fee to Fulham, et cetera. Ben, I responded to you. And again, I just wanted to bring it up. This wasn't really trying to attack Brian Ruiz. I just wanted to have an honest discussion about him. John Walsh gave him 3 out of 10. And Dean Rogers said, I feel sorry for Brian. He gave us some decent amount of years service, knuckled down and put in a shift last season when he was too good to be in the championship and didn't want to be here. Yet fans are still all over him with criticism. Okay. Those are the comments. Mike, I'll go to you first because David, I'll leave it last to you. Mike, what are your thoughts about Brian Ruiz? Give me a rating for him for his time with Fulham.
I'll give him a 4.5, really. 5, just might stretch to a 5, but no more than that. Some of the comments are so over the top about him being one of our best players ever and all that type. You just got to look at the facts. He just wasn't. You know, may have been one of the most skillful. You know, we've had lots of skillful players, but really from the transfer onwards, it was unfortunately it was the wrong move for him and the wrong move for us. I mean, he scored 30 goals in Holland. Everyone was excited, you know, looked at him on YouTube, the goals he was scoring. He seemed to play out wide in a front three. And, you know, he made his debut, subbed after 45 minutes because he couldn't hack it. And it really went downhill from there, apart from maybe 4 or 5 goals which he scored and games as well. You know, I'm for me, the memories of Brian are the chip. I think it was Everton game or the game, I can't quite remember, and the Arsenal game away where he played really well.
He did.
Apart from that, you know, some goals last year. You know, we've loaned him out twice. We've tried selling him. No British club has ever come in for him. You know, this is one of my arguments. If he was so good after that World Cup, why weren't they knocking the door down to sign him? Because they realised in the end the British game just didn't suit him. I've got nothing against the bloke, but it just wasn't right for him or for us. I wish him all the best in Portugal. I'm sure we're going to see every goal he scores and makes, because those particular fans will be putting videos up of that, saying, oh, look at what we're missing. But in the end, he didn't want to be here. I have to praise the club for getting some money, because I was very critical of them giving him a year extension. But this is just best for both parties. And yeah, I blame Joel in the end. In the end, Joel signed a player who scored all those goals and tried to convert him into a number 10, ended up putting him on the wing, and that just ruined him. And there was no way back for him at the club. So, yeah, good luck. And we move on, and hopefully never to have to chat about him again on the show.
All right. Because he has moved on. He has moved on, and this is really, we don't need to be talking about Brian Ruiz anymore. This is the last time I plan on bringing him up, and honestly, I wish him the best. I do wish him the best. He's a quality player. He just didn't show us his best for whatever reason, not being able to adapt to the English game, like you said, maybe playing out of position from when Bo brought him in. You're right, Mike. Very, very good points by you. It just didn't work. We'll just leave it at that, but I wish him the best. That's one of the reasons why I wanted just to talk about it, because, again, I think he tried. I just don't think it was the right fit. And the match that stands out for me before I go to David was that Arsenal match. I thought, okay, now we've seen it. But we never saw it again, unfortunately. All right, David, share me your thoughts about Brian Ruiz.
Well, I'm just glad that we've been able to draw a line under it at last. For him especially, because, you know, he obviously didn't want to be here. And I think a move to somewhere like Portugal and that style of football there will be much more fitting with the sort of player he is. And all I can do is wish him the best, and I hope that he has a successful career over there, because unfortunately it just wasn't the right move for him here. He's had sort of 4 years out of his life or whatever, taken away, stop-start football, loans, you know, one good match, five mediocre ones. And I agree, I thought that Arsenal match away, I thought he was excellent. And if we could have seen more of that, then perhaps things would have been different. But it never worked out for him, not really. No one's going to argue what a talented player he was or what a model professional he was. A polite man, you know, a courteous man, a model professional, as I say. You know, he kept his opinions to himself, really. He didn't bang the drum and shout that he wanted to leave and things like that. He did everything in a very respectable way, and I have total respect for him. And I say I can only wish him the best, but Fulham, it just didn't work for him. So for me, I'm going to give him 5 out of 10 as well, I think, because unfortunately his overall contribution wasn't good enough. There were games where he was worthy of 7 or 8 out of 10, but there were games also, and they were few and far between, with the games where he was worth 4 and 5 out of 10. So 5 out of 10 for me, but I just hope that he does really well in Portugal. And even if he does do really well in Portugal, it doesn't mean he would have done well for Fulham, because we saw enough of him. He had enough chances here for it to work. And I don't blame him completely. It was just, as Mike said, the system, the formation, the other players, the style of football. It was just, you know, it was a square peg in a round hole. So good luck, right, Brian Ruiz, and let's hope. You know, I'll be happier to hear that he's doing well over there than he's not. So it won't make me think badly about us getting rid of him. You know, if he does well over there, I'll be pleased to hear that he's doing well, that he's been able to rehabilitate back into kind of the player he was supposedly before he came to us.
David, well said. You know, again, great job talking about Brian Ruiz after all that we've talked about him on the show. This is, like I said, we're not going to be talking about Brian Ruiz anymore, but I think you ended it on a very good note. And Mike, you shared your thoughts as well. And I just will just end it by saying, like I said before, I wish you the best of luck, Brian Ruiz. I hope you do well in Portugal. And we'll just end it there. Guys, great show. We did this in an hour. Fantastic. It's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do this first time, and we were able to do it. Before we go, Mike, to you, any final thoughts?
I just want to wish Dave all the best, really. Take it easy up to your last operation, and hopefully we'll speak soon.
Okay, great. David, final thoughts before we wrap this up.
Well, thanks, Mike. Likewise to yourself, obviously. Hope the shoulder's getting better day by day. And I intend to take it easy. I've had my shot of morphine, so I'll probably have a snooze in a minute. So, but it's been great to come back. It's really, really been great, because 2 or 3 weeks ago, I couldn't see beyond anything. So now I can start looking towards the future again. And it's been fantastic to do the show, to do what I love doing and talk about what I love, you know, with you wonderful guys. And it's great. So hopefully we'll be doing it again soon.
I hope so. I've thoroughly enjoyed this show. And David, like I've mentioned several times to you, I'm just glad that hopefully you are on the road to recovery. Like I said, one final surgery and then you should be in the clear and move on. And it's just so nice to have you on. And of course, having Mike on as well. And I love doing the show with you guys. And before I go, I just want to mention again, you probably noticed the change in the audio. Hopefully the audio quality is better moving forward. Again, we do have a couple kinks. So if there were some issues today, I'm sorry about that. But again, it's the beginning of using this new service, and hopefully over time, it'll be crystal clear the majority of the time. But it is better than what we've used before. That's number one. Number two, you are going to be hearing more content, more shows, probably of lesser times. Again, you know, the one big criticism I would hear about Cottage Talk would be that it's too long. Well, we're cutting them down, and we're going to make them sharper for you. You know, easier to listen, because they're going to be less amount of time and just more talk, but they're just going to be less duration. And I hope that helps with the situation, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to be getting content. We're going to give you more content. I promise you that. Okay. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. That's going to do it for this episode. For Mike and David, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Mike.
Cheers. Boys.